Certainly glad to see all of you here, and especially we have several visitors, and you're our honored guests, and it's always a delight and encouragement to us. Over this past summer, we've been looking at the story of Joseph and his brothers as Joseph was sold into slavery and sent down to Egypt, and we see how all that worked out according to God's plan as they were reunited, and he forgave his brothers as he understood that this was all part of God's plan, and his family came to Egypt, and they had this big reunion. And so we're going to be thinking along those lines this morning, and we'll be in Genesis chapter 49 in just a few moments if you want to be turning there. As we consider reunions, I was thinking about family reunions. What are your thoughts on family reunions? It probably depends on your age and your connection to the people who will be there. I remember when I was a kid, and even to this day, we have in our family, and my kids have never been, but there is a Verrett family reunion. Now, the Verretts would be my dad's father's mother's people. So my great-grandmother was a Verrett before she married Reynolds, and she had like 8 or 9 siblings all together. And so you can imagine, I don't even know, there might be one of them left, and maybe not, but that's far away, but then they all live in Texas, and they had this huge, you know, so there's these cousins, and there's a bunch of people, and we made 2 trips when I was growing up out there, and it's a long drive to, I think one was in Lubbock or Crosbyton or somewhere. We forever go out there, and then there's this, you know, civic center or some building full of people I had never seen in my life. They're somehow supposed to be related, and, you know, you're introduced all day long to these people and pictures, And then, now this is your grandmother's, and then finally you find some other kids and go outside and play somewhere for a while and it's over. But I didn't really relish the idea of that family reunion, as you can tell. But now as I've gotten older and my own family that I knew growing up, cousins and aunts and uncles have been spread apart and we hardly see them and years go by without seeing them. And I have cousins who have kids that I've never seen. The idea of a family reunion appeals a lot more to me now because I have connections to those people and I know them and I think it'd be neat. And I've even just recently thought about how cool would it be if we could get, you know, my uncles and aunts and all these people together and maybe their kids would be the ones saying, who are all these people? And now, and why are we here? And what's the point of all this? So, well, I'll tie those thoughts in later as we think about family reunions. But here in the, story of Joseph, I want to think about 3 different family reunions that are part of this story of Joseph and his brothers. The first one is one that we've dealt with in quite a bit of our lessons so far, and that's this reunion in Egypt. I'm not going to really dwell on that too much because we've thought about it quite a bit. It started with Joseph's brothers making their way there, and then they had that tearful scene when he reveals that he's their brother and everything's okay. And then the real reunion was when they went home and got the rest of the clan, they all come down to Egypt, and now here's all these, you know, his brothers and their families that he had never met, and Joseph's got a family they've never met. And there's that great scene there in Genesis 46, 29, when he meets his father, and he hadn't seen him since he was 17, and now he's 40, and he weeps on his neck for quite some time as they hug, and there's that awesome reunion. And what a awesome scene that is, and really what makes that so special and emotional was this pain of separation. The pain of being apart for so long made that coming together such a joyous occasion. And as I thought about that in general, just this life seems to be full of separations. We just can't hardly all be together with the people we want to be with all the time. Even if you live in the same house with your very favorite person in the world, chances are that you're pulled apart for large portions of the day, whether it be by work or activities or anything. So just having time together seems to be, something that you cherish and is, then before long you got to go your separate ways as you go about your thing and they go about their thing. And maybe you even live in the same community with your friends and family or even church people. But isn't it true that it's hard to get together and spend time together because we just seem like we're pulled in so many directions? That even if you have that sort of fairy tale thing where I was able to grow up in the same town with both sets of grandparents, and I just thought that's the way everybody was. I've learned now that's pretty rare, in fact, to just live in town with your both sets of grandparents. And but even then, even if you do, chances are you find where those opportunities to be together are sometimes few and far between. But more than likely, you also have family and friends who are spread out over great distances that you hardly ever get to see. And so we enjoy those moments when we can come together because we know that just something about the way this life works, we end up being pulled apart again. And Paul could relate to this in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul. Of course, as we've been thinking about in our class on Sunday morning, he traveled around teaching people about Jesus. And then he would come to have a special bond and love with those who shared in his faith. And pretty soon, he had to be on his way. And so he was often thinking about, and that being torn apart was a sorrowful occasion. We see in Acts chapter 20 that after he had come to Ephesus and he was leaving, it said after he said these things, he knelt down and prayed with them all. This is the elders in Ephesus, and there was much weeping on the part of all. They embraced Paul and kissed him, being sorrowful most of all because of the word he had spoken. They would not see his face again, and they accompanied him to the ship. And so there's this weeping and embracing because Paul is saying goodbye. And Paul often thought about the people that he could not be around. He writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1, and he says to Timothy, "I thank God whom I serve, as did my ancestors, with a clear conscience, as I remember you constantly in my prayers night and day. As I remember your tears, I long to see you that I may be filled with joy." And so Paul, where he was, he's thinking about these people that he couldn't be with. He's thinking about Timothy. He remembers their tearful goodbye, and that creates this longing to be reunited and come back together. And Paul also could relate to the frustrations of not being able to be together, and reunions that have been thwarted. As we see, he writes to the Thessalonian Christians. He says, "We were torn away from you, brothers, for a short time in person, but not at heart. We endeavored the more eagerly with great desire to see you face to face because we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, again and again, but Satan hindered us." And can you relate to that? Maybe we wouldn't say it was Satan doing it. We probably couldn't say that with confidence. But can you relate to the idea that there's somebody you want to get together with and you try over and over and over to you just can't do it. We went down to North Alabama and met up with some old friends. And this was a couple of years ago. We had a meeting, and they had us over. And I said, because I grew up with these guys, and I'd known them all my life, I was like, "We're going to have you to faith. Well, you're coming up, and we're going to make it happen." And so then, it's probably been 2 years. And we have tried. I've called a few times. I've sent an invitation. "Well, we can't this weekend. We can't." And it hasn't happened yet. It's frustrating, isn't it? When you have people, and it doesn't mean you don't care, but it's just something about it. It's hard for us to get together with people because things seem to pull us apart. And that is what makes being reunited and having those moments when you can come together and you can have that reunion, something that we cherish and enjoy. And one thing that makes those reunions even more special is if, in addition to just being able to be together with somebody that you've been apart from, if there's also a reconciling that takes place, if that reunion had been, as is the case with Joseph and his brothers, not just a matter of the fact that he was in Egypt and they were in Canaan, it's hard for them to get in the same place, but they had also been separated by this big rift in their relationship, so that when they come back together now, and there's, in addition to being back together face to face, they also, there's forgiveness, reconciliation, embracing, fellowship. That makes it all the sweeter. The clearest example of that probably in the New Testament is in Jesus' parable of the prodigal son. You'll recall he had gone off to some far away country, but after he hit rock bottom and he was there in the pig pen, he realized he needed to go home. But going home was going to require telling Dad, "I'm sorry, I sinned against you." But he made up his mind, "That's what I've got to do." And he's coming, he's rehearsed his speech, what he's going to say. And we told in verse 20, he arose and came to his father. While he was still a long ways off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And those are some of the best moments that we could experience in this life. When it's a reunion, it's a forgiveness, it's people being joined who have been pulled apart by more than just time and space, but by also maybe perhaps some sin or some problem, and now it's been resolved, it's been worked out. That's what we find, and that's one of the things to me that makes the story of Joseph so compelling. And we should seek out those kinds of reunions in this life, because there's very little else that'll be as rewarding as being reconciled and being brought back together with friends and families and loved ones. So that's the first reunion that we find, and that's the one we've discussed, as I said already, in this story of Joseph. But there's another reunion that I discovered here at the end of the story in chapter 49 that is a little unusual, probably not the kind of reunion we normally think of. And this is a reunion at a place called Machpelah. It's a very unusual kind of reunion. We find this in chapter 49. Now, what's happening in chapter 49 is Jacob is about to die, and he's called his sons in, and he blesses each of them, although for a few of them, it doesn't really sound like much of a blessing. He's not too happy with Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. Their blessing is not really much of a blessing at all. But he's really telling them, as verse 1 says, what's going to happen later. In tonight's lesson, we're going to look at briefly what he says to Judah. But we'll save that for tonight. That'll be part of a bigger sermon on the book of Genesis and seeing Jesus in it. But really, for today's lesson and this idea of a reunion, I want to go down to a passage at the end, beginning in verse 28 of Genesis 49. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with the blessing suitable to him. Then he commanded them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field at Machpelah, to the east of Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. There I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it were bought from the Hittites. When Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. So this is a very unusual kind of the usage of the word reunion, isn't it? And yet, over and over, he refers to it in that sort of language, in a general sense and in a specific sense. In the general sense, he uses this phrase for death, being gathered to my people. And that's interesting to me, that it was dying was spoken of that way. By being, he said, it's time for me to be gathered to my people. Turn back to chapter 25. We'll see this was also what is said of Abraham in referring to his death. Genesis 25, verse 8. Abraham, it says, breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. Then turn over to chapter 35, verse 29. We see this spoken of Isaac as well. Chapter 35, 29, Isaac breathed his last, and he died and was gathered to his people, old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Actually, in the same place Abraham had been buried. And now, like father and grandfather, Abraham and Isaac, it's time for Jacob to die as well, and it's time for him to be gathered to his people. From what I can tell, this means nothing more than simply to go to the grave. The Hebrews called it Sheol. It was the place where the dead people went. And so he's going to be gathered to the rest of those who had gone on before him. You remember the good king Josiah, who would come many, many years later. This is what was said to Josiah in 2 Kings 2. Because he had turned his heart to seek the Lord, it says, therefore, behold, I will gather you to your fathers, and you shall be gathered to your grave in peace, and your eyes shall not see all the disaster I'll bring upon this place. And they brought back word to the king. He was going to be gathered to his fathers. It simply means to go and be joined with those who have gone on before. So in a general sense, there's this reunion in a macabre sort of way in the idea of Jacob being gathered to his people in death. But in a specific way, he gave instructions for his burial there in that cave at Machpelah that Abraham had purchased as a burial place. Like many family plots, maybe your family has a plot. Some people have like an area. Some people have a whole cemetery that's for that family. And then others have kind of a section of a place or a little area. But that's where they're all buried together. In this cave were his grandfather and grandmother, Abraham and Sarah, his mom and dad, Isaac and Rebekah, his first wife, Leah. For bonus points, you might remember what happened to Rachel. Remember, she died in childbirth, and he buried her around Bethlehem. And so she wasn't buried in this tomb with the rest of the family in the family plot. But Jacob here is given instructions that when he dies, he wants to be reunited, so to speak, in this cave where his family had been buried. And in fact, this leads to what must have been one of the longest funeral processions ever. In chapter 50, when Joseph explains to the ruling people in Egypt that he needs to bury his father according to his wishes back over in the homeland, he's given permission, beginning in verse 6 of Genesis 50, Pharaoh answered, "Go up and bury your father as he made you swear." So Joseph went to bury his father. With him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of the household, all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as the household of Joseph, his brothers, his father's household, only the children and their flocks and their herds were left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen. It was a very great company. Can you imagine that? You think about a long funeral procession would be like, you know, from here maybe down into Madison County. That'd be a long funeral procession if you had a, you know, that far to go and if you had a big line of cars. But here is, you know, all the elders of Egypt, Jacob's entire family, they all lined up, I guess, but they all made this huge trip, not down the road a piece, but all the way from Egypt up to the land of Canaan. And it says that if you go on and read the story, they stopped on the far side of Jordan, they wept for 7 days, and the people of the land said, wow, you know, they weren't used to seeing this. And then they came and made their way over to the cave, and then, according to his wishes, Jacob was there buried with his family. Now, what can we say about that? It's a little bit of a dark topic, obviously, right? Death. We don't like to think about it. I mean, nobody likes to think about death, and we don't usually, you know, who wants to have that conversation where we start, you know, thinking about what we're going to do and planning a burial place. And it's a little bit strange when, you know, your parents, I think, if I remember right, Sarah's parents have already kind of arranged for certain things. And when you start making, you know, here's where we want to be and making those wishes, it's like, but it is something that we all must do. And in fact, those who've gone on before us have already gone there. And it's interesting as you talk about being gathered to his people that, you know, whenever you have a funeral and they read the obituary, isn't it interesting that it begins with the who had preceded them in death? Preceded in death by, and they name some people. And those are the ones who've already gone on. And now this person is being joined basically in death with the people who preceded them there. And we can all think about all those people that we've known who have preceded us in death. And it's a little bit silly to sort of pretend that it isn't going to happen to me. As we're told, in fact, in the book of Ecclesiastes, it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. It's interesting that Joshua uses the expression, "I am about to go the way of all the earth." There's all these neat phrases about dying. Instead of saying gather to his fathers and gather to his people, he says, "I'm going to go the way of all the earth." This is when everybody goes. Everybody sitting here probably likes to pretend it isn't going to happen. But the fact is it is going to happen. One day we will be gathered to our people. And that's something that it is good from time to time to lay to heart and think about, because it puts things in perspective and reminds us to make the most use of the time we have, and that this life is short and temporary. And so that's an important thing to remember. And it is kind of a maybe perhaps sad fact from an earthly perspective. And yet the story doesn't have a sad ending, because there's one more reunion that I want to mention from this story of Joseph and his family. And it is the reunion that is yet to come that will be in heaven. Now here's the challenge. Where do you read about that reunion in this story? So you could go ahead and read all the way down through we're almost at the end of the book. Chapter 50 is it. And if you scan on down through there, you won't read anything about this reunion in heaven. So how do we know that Jacob and Joseph and his family and his fathers had this joy or this anticipation of yet a reunion to come? I can say with confidence that they look forward to that, because we're told so in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. In the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, we find out that they did realize that there was more than just this life, and that they looked forward to something yet to come. In Hebrews chapter 11, which is a book just cram-packed with examples of faithful people. Some things about this are said about Abraham and his family. We're told beginning verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going, but by faith he went to live in the land of promise. Here's the twist. As in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. Now, Abraham is told, I'm going to give you a place as an inheritance. And when he got to the land of promise, he kept living in a tent. In fact, the only indication of their having any property was this cave they bought as a burial place. Other than that, they were nomads, which, you know, we might just dismiss as, well, that came along with herding sheep. But the author of Hebrews enlightens us on this to some extent. Why did they remain in tents even though they had arrived? The author of Hebrews says, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations whose designer and builder is God. The idea is that Abraham realized, even though he came to the place where God said, I'm going to lead you, that he hadn't yet arrived at the final destination. And so even though he was living in the promised land, he did so in tents. He didn't put down roots because he knew there's something better coming. And not only did Abraham have this understanding and have this faith, but those who shared his, who shared in his faith had that same hope. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised. Even though they came to the promised land, they understood there was yet something to come. But having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear they are seeking a homeland. Now, if they had been thinking of that which they had gone out, they could have gone back. They had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. He's saying these people wandered around like nomads, looking forward to something they knew they didn't have yet. And they did that because they were looking for a homeland. And he said if they were thinking about the place they grew up, they could have gone back. They weren't looking for that homeland. Abraham could have gone back to Ur of the Chaldees. Joseph and his family could have gone back to Canaan. But they understood there was more than that. But this is another thing that I hadn't picked up on before until I was thinking about this time. What specifically did they look forward to? It wasn't just a house. It wasn't just a mansion. It wasn't just a room in God's house. But notice it says they were looking for a city. Abraham was looking forward to the city that has foundations. And we're told that God has prepared that city. Now, what's a city? A city is a place where people go, isn't it? It's not just one. It's a bunch of people live in a city. I mean, the definition of a city is a whole bunch of people, right? And so not only were they looking forward to just sort of going to be with God, as we often say, but they were looking forward to going to be with God in a place where there was a bunch of other people. And so as a waypoint, Jacob says, put me over there in the tomb where my grandparents are, my parents are. I'll be reunited with them. And as far as reading the book of Genesis, that you would think that's where the story ends. But it's revealed to us in the New Testament that they yet hoped for a city. And they were looking forward to not a city in a cave, I'm sure, but a city with foundations that God had built where all these people of faith were going to go and be. And that was this final reunion that they were looking forward to. And in fact, that promise was for much more than just Abraham and his family there immediately. Notice what Jesus reveals to us in Matthew chapter 8. I tell you, many will come from east and west and recline at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. These same people we're talking about, Jacob, looking forward to that reunion, that great feast, that great table that's going to be set, he says there'll be a whole bunch of other people. That'll be all the people who've shared in the faith of Abraham. Now let's go back and think about family reunions for just a minute, like we started in the beginning. When you're a kid and you think about family reunion, at least me, you want to know, what are we going to do? What's it going to be like? What are they going to have? Is it going to be fun? Is it going to be some kind of activities? Why should I be looking forward to this? Because it doesn't sound like any fun. And I don't even know anybody that's going to be there anyway. Right? That's kind of a kid's perspective. Interestingly, thing about heaven, What sort of a kid's perspective on heaven? Isn't it about the same? What's everybody going to do all day? Is it going to be any fun? Is this going to be somewhere I want to be? Now let's think about from an adult point of view. What's the appeal of a family reunion? It isn't so much what kind of activities. Do you care if they're going to have games to play? That's not really what you think about, is it? What makes it exciting? It's who you know is going to be there, right? That's why you want to go. What makes heaven exciting? Isn't it who's going to be there? Number one, it's God and our Savior Jesus. And if that's the only people you know, if that's the only person there, you'd want to go, right? If the whole planet Earth was going somewhere else and you had the option to go to be where God is and where Jesus is, that's where we want to be. That's where we want to go. But the wonderful news is that's not all that's going to be there, is it? Think about people you know who are going to be there. Isn't that something to look forward to? When you can imagine going to a city that's been prepared by God for people of faith throughout all time. Abraham's going to be there. You ever wanted to meet Joseph? He's going to be there. Jacob's going to be there. All these people of faith, we're told, are there. They're not there yet. They're going to be there. There's going to be this place that we're all going to go after the resurrection. And that's that awesome reunion. And as the old spiritual goes, when in that great getting up morning, there's going to come that day where people are going to go and it's going to be a reunion like you've never seen. And you don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss it. We sang that song right before this, When All of God's Singers Get Home. Wherever we would have family get together, my grandmother would ask us to sing that song. We'd be at my aunt and uncle's house. It'd just be our family around. She'd want to sing When All of God's Singers Get Home. And I tell you what, that's going to be awesome. When All of God's Singers Get Home. And my grandmother probably want to sing that song again when we get there. I don't know. But that's a wonderful thing to look forward to, being reunited with all God's people. And you don't want to miss that because this life is going to end. And that's that thing we don't like to think about. It's going to happen. We're being given this opportunity to get ready to go to the big reunion. So we have to choose now to have the kind of faith that Abraham did that says, I want to follow the Lord. I want to do what he tells me. I want to do whatever he says. Because I believe in him and I believe in his promise and I trust in him. We want to be like Joseph who says, I want to go there. And Joseph gave instructions to bring his bones up out of this place because he didn't stay in here in Egypt. He knew there was a better place. We want to know that there's that better place waiting for us. And that comes with having faith in God, putting our faith in him, living according to his word. If you're here this morning and you haven't yet made that commitment to start down that path, I would challenge you to please don't let the opportunity pass. If you've never been baptized to be added to Christ and his church, to be given that promise to have your sins washed away,